What up? Welcome to another episode of 94 Feet with Coach JT. Please leave a like or a comment below as we continue to grow and just bring some dope people on the show and continue to grow this podcast. Today, for my football heads, for my youngsters, my old heads from the city, man, I got a dope treat for you today. Let me take my time as I read a little bit of this coach's resume. A native of Sacramento, California, he played two seasons at Sacramento City College, where he was selected to the first team All-State team as a defensive lineman for the Panthers. Then he went on a transfer to Mexico State, graduated there in 2002. Currently, this coach is the outside linebackers and defensive end coach at the University of Oklahoma. Prior to that, he spent some time with Arizona State University as well as Fresno State University as the defensive line coach. Jamar Cain, what's up, sir? How you doing?
Good, man. Appreciate you having me. Oh,
man, this is dope, man. I appreciate you taking time at your schedule. As my show says, 94 feet, we're going to jump right into it, man, and talk about home, Sacramento, for a minute, man. Let's talk about Cali, where you grew up in Sacramento, and what part of town was that?
Yeah, man, it's funny because I'm originally from Meadowview.
Okay.
Right? I grew up as a child in the View, right there off of Matson by Mark Hopkins.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Hopkins Elementary School. So I went to a little Christian school right over there, all the way up to probably the fifth or sixth grade. So, like, if you originally ask me where I'm from, people would say you're from Meadowview.
Mm-hmm.
But parents moved out to Elk Grove area after that, after the sixth grade. Then I went to Valley High School. And then kind of when Elk Grove, like, Laguna was just becoming
right.
Laguna, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it just ran through the south area my whole life. So, I mean, I'm from Valley High, if
right.
you ask me. That's where my roots are from.
South Sac native, Valley High for sure. So being from Valley High, South Sacramento, again, I know your resume, your history is football. Has it always been football? What other sports maybe you have kind of played or dabbled in growing up? I mean, during our time, I know we was always outside. So,
yeah. So I played Parkway Little League.
Oh,
I don't know. I played at Parkway Little League. So it was baseball, huge. And then we played soccer. My brother and I played soccer, and then we played basketball and all that stuff. But I was really, really baseball and soccer. My brother played more basketball. I couldn't shoot and all that stuff. I couldn't, you know, I just wasn't coordinated enough to do the basketball stuff. Couldn't jump. So it was football, basketball. It was football, baseball, and soccer. Then I played for the Sacramento Raiders too. That's where I got my footprint, Sacramento Raiders, just growing up there. Playing for the Raiders, but yeah, no other sports. Just then, as I got into high school, just went straight to football.
Dope. Shout out to Parkway Little League, man. I used to play for the Red Sox growing up over there, and then we had the little, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I went to Charles Mack, so yeah, definitely South Sac, man. Home, man. You get to talk about South Sac Raiders. At that point in time, it was a movement. I mean, I can remember it was all gold and black all over South Sacramento. Getting to that field, like at that young age, who are some people you may have kind of looked up to or kind of looked like, okay, this is what I want to get into, or who kind of inspired you to pursue that football?
At that time, my dad was taking me to a lot of high school games. And, you know, our Friday nights would be going to high school games. And I was in middle school at that point. So, you know, I would go and watch, like, the Ray Caruso of the world, the James Kids of the world, especially being in the South area between Valley and Elk Grove, because they were really, really good. You know, Ted Nwoke, I think I'm saying it right. He went to Valley, went to UCLA. Just a lot of those guys that kind of like shaped me. Then when I got into my freshman year of high school, I went to school with Jeremiah Farms, just looking up the Farms so much, man. And then Damon Wheeler. And those are the type of guys that really molded me into the player, into the guy that I am now, just football wise, mentality wise. We had such a good team back then at Valley High School that it was. Yeah. It was fun, man. And then, you know, go on a crosstown rival to Elk Grove. I mean, they had the quarterback Cable Davis and Chael Angel was there. And there were just so many good players throughout that came through that South area that it was back when I was coming out, there wasn't all these extra high schools. Like,
well,
if I come to Sacramento to recruit now, I got to spend a whole day in the South area. It was like 10 high schools, you know? Whereas back in the day, it was only Valley, Elk Grove, Florin, and then Laguna was just being built, and that was it. And all the kids all went to one high school, so it was different back then. That's why I don't think there's no true power in Elk Grove area no more. There's too many high schools. It's too diluted now.
Yeah, it's definitely tough. I remember those days. I said close friends with Aaron Raspberry, went to church with him and then his dad Raz. But you know what I'm saying, my family friend Zach Young went to Valley with you guys over there, and you guys were loaded, man. I remember going to a game, I don't even know, man. It was so crazy. Farms, all you guys, it was standing room only. It might have been an Elk Grove or it might have been a playoff game, but talk about that environment, man, being in those games where it was like the whole city, the whole Sacramento South Side came out to those games. How was playing that environment in high school for you as like a player? Was that something you kind of always imagined, or it wasn't thought of to be that big?
Man, I imagined it, but I didn't realize like the movement that it was. You know, it was such a movement that back then, because like we'd go to the mall, we'd go to Florham Mall with our jerseys on. You know, and it was like we were superstars. You know, like, oh, there goes Valley High. But, you know what I mean? Or we go to a sideshow or something like that. And we got our Valley High Letterman jackets on. You know what I mean? So it was such a movement. Then you go to the games and the JV, like, you know, we like be in the stands for the JV game. You see, this game is getting packed. I mean, at halftime of the JV game, we go get dressed and we come out like, oh, my God, look at all these people here. And it was so loud, and it was just such a fun time. And then just to play on the field with so many elite players, like, you know, like the Aaron Raspberries, the Antoine Simmonses, you know what I mean? And just those type of guys. I think off that team alone, there's five or six NFL players, like Warner Herndon. Like, there were so many guys that played multiple years, Jerry DeLoach. Yep. You know, there's so many. I can just keep naming guys that played in the league from one high school over a 3-year span that I was fortunate enough to be a part. And it was so good for, like, I get sad now when I go home and I look at Valley High School and where it's at now. Like, I just wish it can get back, because I know how special that school is, especially being in that community. Like, Valley needs to be good so that community can have something to lean on. Cause like, I see what Grant does for that community.
Yes, sir.
You know, Valley needs that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the one thing we talk about. The expansion has hurt because more kids want to go further south, but not knowing that you're leaving your area, what needs you the most and what needs the money to come in from the games and stuff like that. That's kind of had a pull on it.
Like, you could take Monterey Trails. Monterey Trails took away from Florin being a powerhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Florin was so good when I was in high school, man. Like, just building that Monterey Trails there, and then building Laguna, then building Sheldon, then building Pleasant Grove, then building Kasunaso to bring Franklin. Like, Elk Grove is not – Elk Grove, you know, Jen Heff's a great friend of mine. They're just not the school that they used to be.
Yeah, definitely different. Definitely different times as far as that development. So we'll talk about that far as far as the growth. During your high school time at Valley, because, you know, now kids have trainers, they have, man, all kind of – how much work – were you guys putting in? Because, again, I know Big Raz, you know, he's big, all those guys. But how much work were you guys putting in? Because, again, your records, those numbers are crazy as a team, as individuals. How much time did you guys spend working on your craft? You know what I'm saying? We might not have had individual trainings. You might have had workouts. But how much time, like, say, with a day or a week, would you guys spend just grinding and working out?
After school was Coach Hoskins, we all had 7-period PE. So we would lift in 7-period PE. And 7-period PE was football. So we lifted in 7-period PE every day. We ran every day. Once the season's over, you're in 7-period PE. That's what you did. And we would lift every day until after about 4, 5 o'clock. The basketball guys went to play basketball because Coach Hoskins just left it open. And then Coach Swafford was the basketball coach. The basketball guys go there. Then they come back.
I didn't even know that. I didn't know Swaff was there. Swaff was at Valley? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, Swafford was at Valley. So those guys would go over there with Swafford.
Wow.
And then my brother drove and all that stuff, so I wasn't driving at that time. So I would just sit there and just lift all day with, like, Yori and these bunch of other guys. I would just lift all day. So we just lifted all day. We didn't have trainers back then. Our trainer was going to Damon Wheeler's house and pushing his dad's truck around the neighborhood. And Jose would just say, all right, you in the truck, get out. You push. Next guy in the truck, you push it. Then, like, that was just what – Jose did, and Damon had in his garage, he had a squat rack and all the other stuff. So we just go over to Damon's house, say on like a Friday night, instead of us going out, we just go lift at Damon's house. It was just what we did. I mean, we weren't into the rah-rah. We always had a focused plan, because like when you walked in the Valley weight room at that time, you saw so many guys on the walls, you know, same as Sac City, that you were so focused that you wanted to be on that wall. Like, these guys back here, like, you want to be on those walls. You want to have your name on there. So everybody's so focused on getting scholarships back then that we didn't really do extra stuff. Now, we went out with the sideshows. They were what we had to do. But, like, when we came to work, we all worked. They just helped the younger guys, like the Keith Lewis's of the world, the Manasa Poyas of the world. They saw us work. And those guys just took it to a next level.
Yeah, shout out to Keith, man. He's my year, man. Good dude. And on the hoop court, man. We had some good battles on the hoop court. Going through Valley, man, going through, say, your senior year, again, those accolades, winning games. What's your mindset after you finish your senior year? Kind of, okay, now it's like transition. Nowadays, kids start playing for college at middle school, high school. Right. Back then, it's like now, as far as, I mean, again, letters coming in, what was your mindset about where you want to go or any ideas? How did that work for you in that time?
Farms and I were so close back then. He was like an older brother to me, even though I had an older brother. Like Farms was like a big brother to me. So I used to fly out to Washington every time I had like a down week. My dad would fly me out to Washington. I just go kicking in Seattle for the weekend. So I wanted to go to Washington. It was UW or bust for me. So I got to meet the coaches. Like I was like in the locker room. Like I was everywhere with Farms when it came to going to UW, and then Franquil and everybody was up there. So I was like, that was home. That was like South Sac all over again. Everybody was like, all the homies. Like all the homies over at Farms house. And I would just fly in on the weekends, watch the game, then fly back. But for me, it was like, it was Washington or bust. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get the offer from Washington. So I went to Sac City. Well, actually I went to Butte because my brother and Josh Ramson went to Butte College. So I went to Butte College for a semester, and I should have went to Sac City because Sac City was really good at that time with Hoskins and other guy, not Hoskins, but Coach Griffin, Griff. Coach Sully. Like I should have went to Sac City, but I went with my brother and them. Then I transferred right back to Sac City, and once I went to Sac City, it was like, man, it was there. Oh, it was like the who's who from the South area who was all really good. It was like, oh, these are all the homies is here. You know, so then I went to Sac City for 2 years, and that just brought me back to how I was at Valley. We were all just focused on getting scholarships and getting the hell up out of Sac. So we had a plan. All the guys I played with, I could just start naming all the names off of there too. You know, all of them.
Crazy.
We all just ended up getting out of there, and I was so focused on, all right, I want to graduate in 3 semesters and get a degree and get out of here. And I just put a plan together. That's one thing I've always done. I was always trying to put a plan together and try to stick to it.
Right. So
that's what I mean. Get through there.
And you talk about, putting a plan together in college, and then even if you're knowing yourself, right? I would say you had to carry about anywhere from 15 to 18 units a semester, because you said in 3 semesters you had to put in some work. So, okay.
Yeah, I was, man.
Summer
I was
school.
Putting in work. I was working. I was going to summer school. I was working at Cal Worthington Chevrolet. I don't know if you remember
that
town.
Yeah.
Franklin Boulevard and Florin Road.
Yeah, Franklin Florin.
Right there. Also, I was right there. I'm working at Cal Worthington Chevrolet. I would get off of practice, go to Cal Worthington Chevrolet, wash cars, be the lot porter, get the cars all lined up, wash every car on the lot, and then go home, do my homework, and do it all over again. And on the weekends, I work 8 to 10 hour days on the weekend. Like somebody bought a car, I had to go detail it, clean it out, you know, bring the old car from the front to the back. Like I was working, man, but I was so focused on just getting the heck out of Sac and just didn't want to be that guy that was just sitting around and like, oh yeah, I played at Valley in 96-97. Like I just didn't want to be that guy, man. I wanted more.
That's dope. That grind really, I mean, pay off is for sure. So you get out of Sac City. How many offers did your sophomore year at Sac City? How many offers came your way?
Man, I had a bunch, man. I had anywhere from, I wanted to go to UNLV. I thought I was going to go to UNLV because my dad was living in Vegas at the time. And I was like, all right, it'll be cool. My mom and dad got divorced my senior year. My dad moved to Vegas. So I thought it'd be pretty dope to go to UNLV. Dad can watch me play my last two years. But I was a mid-year graduate, and UNLV only had 2 scholarships for a mid-year graduate. They was like, oh, you can go back to Sac City for one more semester and finish up your, and I was already done with my AA. You can go back for one more semester, take some extra class, and you can come in the summer. I'm like, nah, I'm not doing that. So then it came down to Boise, San Jose, and New Mexico State. And at that time, Boise was just about to become Boise. Because right, Dirk Cutter was there. They went to their first bowl game. Mm-hmm. They were just about to blow up. But they brought me on the wrong weekend. It was snowing. I ain't never seen snow before. I was cold.
I'm good.
I had some chucks. I had some chucks on. My chucks were soaking wet. Like I was over it, man. Like, I'm not, y'all brought me on the wrong weekend. They trying to hand me jackets and, like, hey, we could put your shoes in a dryer. Like, man, don't even touch me. So then I went to New Mexico State.
Yeah.
And their whole staff was black. Huh. The head coach was black. They had like 5 or 6 black coaches. I'd never seen that before. So I was like, man, this is different. And my grandpa at the time was like, man, you need to give that brother a chance. Cause I was living with my grandpa because he's such an influential in my life. Mm-hmm. So he was like, man, you need to give that brother a chance. I was like, sure, like New Mexico State is probably the best decision I've ever made because they've helped me so long along my career to where I'm at now. Mm-hmm. Like just going to New Mexico State has helped me more than anything else in my coaching career. And it was, I mean, for the one time I listened to my grandpa, it all worked out. So New Mexico State.
Yeah. Shout out to grandparents, man. Everybody value your grandparents. I always say that, man. They drop a lot of knowledge on us, man, for sure. So you go to New Mexico State, get your foot in the door. Just how was that experience getting in there, man? How was it for you?
Man, it was fun, man. I mean, I got all my boys. Some of my best friends are right now are my college friends. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So we all got a group chat. We still talk to this day. We try to go on a vacation once a year. Like, those are like my high school friends are my high school friends, mm-hmm. but your lifelong friends become your college friends because mm-hmm. for some reason you're in that growth right there. You know, you're in that little weird angle there where you're transitioning to become a man, where you're paying your own bills. So when you're a college student, you ain't got no money. So the guy who ain't got no money sitting next to you,
right?
That's the boy for life. Because both y'all had $2. Y'all were trying to figure out, okay, let's put this money together and go get 4 cheeseburgers.
How we gonna eat?
Yeah. You know, or so that's how, you know, we became like such good friends. But I loved it, man. And it was a great place to go to school. Like, I would love to retire in New Mexico right now if I could. But the transition from JUCO to Division I football is tough. I just tell these kids this every day because you think you know it. And then you get here to college, it's like, nah, the playbook is thicker. The ante is bigger because now the wins and losses are you know, that can cause a coach's job, especially mm-hmm. a school like Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you got to be prepared for the step up. And the offensive linemen are bigger. And my first year, I struggled because I wasn't prepared for it. Then my next year, I said, okay, let me shut up. You don't know everything. Just listen and trust what these guys are saying. And I had a way better year my senior year.
That's super dope. So just as far as that level up where you had to go through your senior year, give me a little bit of this, describe what that day, that grind, because I mean, I know playing Division I basketball, having to walk on, earn a scholarship, but what was it like for you as far as like, how early were you up? How many practices you guys had? Because they kind of, you're on their schedule, so tell me what that was like.
Yeah. Well, I just know our schedule around here. So our schedule there was like, you know, we practice in the afternoon at that time. Like here, we do everything in the morning. So here, like, excuse me, you got to get out. So there, we got up probably about 8 or 9. And once you step foot on campus, you're there till 7, 8 o'clock at night. So I would go to school from have an 8 to like, all right, so let's say a 9 to 10, then a 10 to 11. Mm-hmm. Then I get my, you know, 11 to 12, then 12 to 1. I go get a break. Then I got to go walk down to academics and put my 2 hours in a study hall. Mm-hmm. Then I got to go and get my treatment in. Then we got practice at 3:30 or 4. Right. Then you're on the field till 6. Then you got to come back and do your academic stuff. Then throughout that stuff, you still got to eat. Like it was crazy. In my first year, I wasn't prepared for the schedule. And then what I learned when I got out of college, I missed the schedule because I was so used to somebody telling me where to be and how to go and how to eat and how to dress. So I missed the schedule. So that's what really affected me when I got out of college my first time. I tell kids, it's like, I can't wait to get the heck out of here, coach. No, that's fine, but you're going to miss the schedule because you're used to being on schedule your whole life. And now you've been told that you don't have a schedule no more. Like, you're going to miss that. And that's what kids miss the most.
That's right. At any point in time, let me ask you this. Did you think about coming home?
Yeah, I did. I called one time, like, man, shit. And it's a natural thing. Like, well, this ain't working out, so I'm going to come home. And my mom was like, oh, you can come home, but you ain't coming here. And then my grandfather was an Olympian. And he went to UCLA. He was in the 52 Olympics. So I called him because, again, I was living with him at the time. And I called him. I was like, man, I'm thinking about coming home. Like, school's hard, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, well, everything, this is nothing that I've never been through. And he's like, remember, Jamar, I was doing this stuff in the 40s and the 50s. So imagine what I was going through as a black male. So what are you complaining about? I'm like, all right, I better shut up and just nut up. Again, you got to listen to your grandparents. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he went through it through the hard times.
Yeah,
so, yeah. That's what's up. At New Mexico, any highlights? Give me a couple of highlights, big games, some memorable moments you had while you was there, man, that just stick out still to this day.
Man, probably playing at Texas. That was pretty cool.
How loud was that?
Man, it was so – actually, you know what? The best game was South Carolina, my very first college game. That's what I'll never, ever forget. Lou Holtz, it was his first season there at South Carolina. They're on like a 20-game losing streak. It was so loud in there. I've never seen anything like that. Like, I'm coming out, I'm like, what the heck? Like, going to the SEC, into the belly of the SEC, your first game, like, that was ridiculous, man. So that's the one I'll always remember. You know, Texas was out. It was cool. But it's, like, so loud, you can't even hear it. You can't even think it.
Right. That's crazy.
Like, you're like, what? So those were some really like nice highlights, man. Playing against Georgia, that was fun. I got so many, man, that I just cherish and just kind of like laugh and smile. The biggest thing that you cherish is the games are the games, but it's the interaction with your teammates when you're traveling.
Yep.
Interaction with your teammates when you're in the whole hotel. It's those little moments, or just like those little special moments that, like, maybe you're waiting to board the charter flight and y'all sitting in the little circle just talking crap to each other and getting on it. Like, those are the moments that stick with you longer than I think the games, because after a while it just becomes another game, you know, and it's just a moment. But those are like, it was like stick in your mind where, you know, if I call my boys, like, man, remember when I was getting on you, blah, 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 this, and we all start laughing. Yeah. So, yeah, those are the moments that stick with me the most.
Definitely, for sure. I think I posted them on Instagram a while ago about, especially basketball players, those charter bus trips. We had to sleep across the rows. I said, man, y'all know nothing about that. We had to sleep across the rows for 4 or 5 hours and just, you had to make it do, but then have people climbing over the the seats. You had to just make do, man. But definitely that's dope. Yeah. So, finish up in New Mexico. Now, at this point in time, UW or bus? After you go to Mexico, is it league or bus? Or what's on your mind at this point after you
finish?
No,
so as I got into Mexico State, it was like a blessing in disguise. I had an afternoon class, so it went into position meetings. So I used to come right from class and had to go get dressed and go to practice field. So I missed my position meeting. So I had it for a whole semester going into my senior year, spring and semester, because it's one of my major. They couldn't do anything about it. So I ended up having to go meet with the coaches in the coaches' offices for my position meeting. So I used to go sit in the coaches' meetings, and I would run my meeting with the whole defensive staff. So then that's when I started transitioning, like, maybe I want to coach. This isn't too bad. Mm-hmm. So probably about middle way of the second semester of my junior year, spring of my junior year, senior year, spring up before my senior season, junior year, I started transitioning and wanted to be a coach. So then it was like, all right, I want to transition to coaching because I was with those guys all the time. And then they started having me over, and then they started offering me like, hey, Jamar, you should think about getting into coaching. It's a good profession. Like, you got a good temperament for it. So after I graduated, I was like, all right, I'm gonna try to get into coaching.
Okay.
Like, that was kind of like, you know how, like, it was like a blessing at the time. I didn't realize what the blessing that was happening then, but it was like, it was there. That's right. What got me into coaching.
Okay. So they already put you that tunnel to that way. Again, yeah. I know you've been in it for a while. I've been in it for a different aspect for a while. Just, how rewarding is it for you to kind of now still be around the game, but also give your, you know what I mean, give your experiences and your knowledge into younger guys or to players and stuff like that?
Man, it's the you know, interesting, one of my better players was just sitting here today, and he and I were talking, and I was like, hey, man, you got to help me out with these freshmen, because we got a lot of freshmen that graduated early. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, you got to help me out, because everything that they do now is wrong. Like, I don't care. Because here at Oklahoma, you get some 5 stars, you get some 4 stars, mm-hmm. you get these legit, like, we're recruiting the top 1% of the country,
right.
You know, and we're getting these kids, and they're so used to being athletic and so used to just beating people that now, you know, you got to put some skills behind it, mm-hmm. and we're trying to put these skills behind it, so they get frustrated really quick. So the model, you know, so now I'm like trying to mentor an older guy, and they're like transitioning from player a friend now, and mm-hmm. now the mentorship, and that's what I enjoy most about. And then he understands, like he said something too, he's like, coach, they don't understand yet that it may seem like you're attacking them, but you're really helping them, mm-hmm. and they just see it as an attack mode instead of you helping. And that's the most rewarding part, is having those dialogues with the older guys, because then in 2 years I had that same dialogue with that freshman mm-hmm. that was here,
have them pay it back. Okay.
Yeah, I think the most rewarding part too is like the relationships too. It's like my phone rings all the time with just former players. Just like, coach, what's up, man? What are you doing? Like the kids at Fresno State, they may FaceTime me 2-3 times a week, and I ain't been there in 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. just to like make fun of me or something, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Those relationships are like, so those are like the relationships that I cherish the most, or getting that wedding invitation, or right. seeing his kids have kids, you know, and seeing them grow up. I keep calling them kids, but they're now they're adults now, you know? Right. So those relationships that I cherish most, that are the most rewarding part of it.
Super dope. I definitely agree with that too. How does, any challenges though? Because again, you know, we're being black males in the coaching world. As far as how much extra grind did you have to put in yourself? As far as it helped for the people from the coach from Nesco giving you in the avenue, the tunnel. But how much off the clock did you have to put in yourself though to kind of make sure you're a mainstay? You know what I mean? Because I know, as we know, as teams go, as wins go, coaches our jobs are at will, right. employee pretty much. I mean, even if, you know, higher level different, you right. still get to get paid out to a certain extent, but lower level myself, whatever, we're at will employees. But how much extra work do you put in off the clock to be a better coach?
Man, I just wanted to make sure that I came to work every day and I was a pleasant employee to be around. I want to be a pleasant person for the guys up on this third floor here. It's funny because a coach told me one time, don't be that guy in the building that when people see you walking towards them, everybody goes the other way. Don't be that guy, especially as a black male. We can't be that guy. We can't be the angry guy, because that's what people assume us to be. And then you got to pick and choose your battles. And I think I navigated that really well. I think I have a pretty calm temperament too, where it's like, I want to learn. I have a growth mindset. And I don't have a fixed mindset where I don't feel like, I always assume I'm wrong. And I'm assuming that I'm wrong because I want to search for that answer. And I'm always going to, every time I walk into a room or walk into a meeting, like I can go in Lincoln's office right now and have a conversation. Everything I talk about, I'm assuming I'm wrong because I want to learn. Okay. And I think as coaches, we always got to continue learning, because then you have those coaches, you've probably been around them, that it's like, well, it's the way I've always done it. Well, the game has changed and you got to adapt to the game. So I've always tried to stay ahead of it. Like I just did a clinic with the Titans, and I try to do clinics with high school coaches. As many people I can do, because if I can learn something from it, that's going to make sure I keep my job. That's what I try to do all the time.
Definitely learning that for sure. That's super dope. Let's go game day real quick. Do you get them game day jitters still with the coach? Do you get that blood flow, or are you more so kind of even keel, laid back guy on the game day?
I'm really like at practice, I'm pretty intense at practice. Okay. So practice should be harder.
Right.
You should feel my anger on a practice day. Like Monday through Friday, like we ain't gonna get along. Saturday's about you. It ain't about me. Like Saturday, I told those guys, do what you gotta do Saturday. If you need to go out there and you need to do your little dance, go do it, because it's about you. It ain't about me. We will handle that on Sunday.
Okay.
And I do get my jitters. I get my jitters because it's like, I want to make sure that I do enough. Are they prepared enough? You know, and I'm always trying to whisper something in their ear. Like, and then like Ronnie Perkins, who'll probably be a first round pick here this year for me, number 7. Hmm. He's doing this to me, like, get out of my fucking ear. You know what I mean? Like, he's just, get out my ear. I'm like, I'm just trying to give him little tidbits every now and then. Yeah. But game day, I don't really get nervous at all. I used to, but now I'm just like, all right, it's about them. These kids are prepared. And that's the biggest thing. I just want to make sure that they're prepared. That's what keeps me up at night. Like during the season, I don't sleep. I may sleep 3 hours a night. Like, cause I'm all, my mind don't stop. As a coach, your mind is always going like, oh, maybe I should do this. Damn it, did I go over this? I need to attack this guy better. So my mind doesn't stop at all.
Right. So it's not funny. We get to that mind part. I mean, it's a lot more aware as coaches and men in general about our health in general. Because, I mean, I've been the same way certain times where I'm like, why am I up? Because I'm thinking about plays or games. How do you kind of more so, I mean, stay healthy, though? Because, I mean, sacrifice, you know, spend 5-6 hours a day with the kids, vice versa, coaching that energy. How do you get that rest or your mind to kind of mend? Because you have to somewhat ease your body and your mind to be able to do it again and not lose it or whatever. What kind of tips or what do you kind of work on to kind of get you to get, you know, relax and get rest and recover?
I try to get a workout in every day. Okay. I try to get some type of workout, some type of physical activity in every single day. And that's the easy way of saying it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I just cut my phone off. Because if I cut my phone off, that means there's no group text coming. I can't text anybody. And that's my way of saying I need a minute. And I'm very fortunate too. We got some of the best doctors here at Oklahoma. So I get my blood pressure checked a lot.
Nice.
The doctors just, hey, you got to work on this. You know, you got to eat right. And we got really good nutritionists here. So I try to eat healthy throughout the season. Mm-hmm. But it's a struggle though, because it's natural that we worry. And I'm a big time worrier. And I'm more worried that you're, as a player, not prepared for the game.
Right. That's good. Good information, because I know just trying to get to relay the kids or other coaches, you know, other coaches should know, take care of themselves, because especially, yeah, again, our young black men, our health, heart disease stuff is going on, and we're coaching, we're giving it all, but I think that plays a part.
Mental health is huge. And then I think when you get away, you got to get away. You know,
right.
That's easier said than done, but when you get away, you got to get away. Right. Whether that be go to my kids' games or do something. When you get away, you got to get away. And then I tried during the season not to wear as much Oklahoma stuff. I still feel like I'm like,
yeah.
I mean, like if I go to the grocery store, I'm not wearing no Oklahoma stuff because I'm not a coach right now. I'm trying to get away from it. So I feel like when you get away, you got to get away from it.
Nice. So you talked about the kids. Are they active in any sports right now? Are they out there or anything kind of going on?
My daughter is a elite gymnast. She's really good, so she travels the country doing gymnastics meets. My son doesn't do sports, doesn't do football. He's more of a techie kid, which is fine because sports don't define him. You know, I don't want him to think football defines him. Just because dad doesn't think that, assume you have to do it. That's not how this thing works. Like, football is what was my avenue. It doesn't have to be your avenue. Sometimes these kids, especially young black males, feel like they have to please mm-hmm. their dad. They have to play sports to define them. And sports don't define you at all. This is what helped me in my career and in my life. It doesn't have to help you. So whatever he wants to do, I'm good with it. I'm not going to be that dad, so you got to go play football. You got to play basketball. No, man, just be a good human. Just be a good person.
That's super dope. How rewarding is it for you to see, like, them choosing their own paths, but putting the work in? Again, you said your daughter is moving around, so I know she works at it. How rewarding is it to you, I guess, to somewhat get away, right, and see her compete if you can, or go watch her compete? How does that make you feel? Watch him do his little thing with the tech. How does that make you feel?
Yeah, it's fun. So my son does rock climbing. See, his arms get bigger. Like, that type of thing. Man, damn, boy, look at your arms.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's his little outlet. And, you know, he doesn't – they don't think dad knows what the heck he's talking about. But it's fine. Like, even though I tell my daughter, hey, you need to focus, because like she'll do an event, and while she's waiting for the event to go, some other girl may fall down off the apparatus. And I'm like, she's screwed. She watched it. I'm like, you need to close your eyes and go through your mental patterns before the routine. You ain't gotta watch that girl go if you know what psychs you out. So it's fun, man. It's fun how those conversations are. She rolls her ankle. She says, "Dad, can I come see the trainers?" And like, my kids are fortunate because she had to come down here to a world class facility and get, you know, cold tub and mm-hmm. get rubbed. You know, get her legs rubbed, like all the other stuff she needs. She can go walk downstairs and get it. So it's fun to see them.
That's super dope. So, just again, I wanted to bring it back to Sacramento. What kind of advice would you give? Again, I know, like I said, we have to be a little, right? We've had to adapt and learn as coaches, and times are so different. But a lot of kids via social media, all these highlight films. What are things that are coaches looking for the next level, just as far as outside of the five-star, whatever, kids that possibly get an opportunity to play at a just a higher level, not even the major D1s, what things that kids should do well, work on that in that football realm or world to get opportunity to play at any level of college football?
Well, and it's the easiest thing to say, and that's the first and foremost, you got to have some type of grades, man. Like, that's 50% of it. Like, dude, go to class. Mm-hmm. Like, just go to class. And I wasn't the smartest kid, but just go to class, right? And then the next thing, too, is put the work in. Like, it's not going to – just because you go see your trainer once a week, you think the stuff is going to start. Like, oh, okay, I'm good now. No, you got to put the work in. And a lot of kids these days think they know it all. Like, he's called a coach for a reason. Even if he's a terrible coach, try to take something from him and add it to your game. Like, I tell my guys all the time, like, if your high school coach taught it a better way than I did, then okay, I will adapt to that because you like the way, like, I think coaches got to be adaptable. Mm-hmm. So if I was telling a young kid from SAC, first of all, every SAC kid gets a look in my book. Like, everywhere I've been, I've signed SAC kid. I signed four kids to Arizona State last year from Sacramento. Like, you're a SAC kid, you are getting a look for me. Go to class, put the work in, and don't stress out over recruiting, because recruiting stresses these kids out and it has you doing things that you should not be doing. And then whatever you post on social media will come back to get you. Like if you liking or retweeting the big booty girl, like, I don't want to see that. You know what I mean? Like, all right, if you're that type of guy, go private. You know what I mean? Keep your stuff private, but just stay off of social media, because it just will get you in trouble more than you think it will.
Yeah, I'm glad. Again, like you say, sometimes the unsealing they hear, but I'm sure they got to hear from somebody else, a higher source. So that's super dope. And again, I just want to just reiterate, man, I appreciate you. I mean, I've been following you for a while, again, knowing from years, but now, again, talking to your bro, I think then when they hear this message again, it'll be, I hope it resonates for them, man, because it's opportunities, right? It's about building bridges, and I'm big on communication, right? As far as never know who you cross, paths you may cross, because they may not know, you may not have OU on when you come home, but you could be walking to the grocery store, to the games, who you talk, you know, watch what you say to people, always be respectful.
I'll tell you a prime example. I was at another look barber shop. That's where I go and get cut up from Rob. Not Rob. Mark always cuts me, but it's Rob's shop.
Yep.
Now I'm in there. I ain't got nothing on. Like, I don't wear anything when I come home, and this kid walks in and he's like stressed out of recruiting, and Mark and him don't tell who I am. And he and I just have an open dialogue, like, hey, you need to do this and do that about recruiting. He kind of looks at me like, what the hell do you know about recruiting? And I'm just like, don't worry about it. You know what I mean?
See?
Like, and that's what I'm saying. Like, you got to be humble enough to be able to listen. Like, I know he's trying to listen to Mark as Mark is cutting my hair, but you don't know who I am. And I'm trying to give you some tidbits of it. And it's funny because Mark was at that time when I was at Arizona State. Mark was like, you know, that coach was at Arizona State. The kid was like, you just don't know. You know what I mean? And it's just like, you got to be humble. Like, I'm humble enough to know I don't know everything. I'm humble enough to know I need to listen.
I think that's the biggest thing. Tell our kids, just listen first. And, you know, but, and I think they also have a struggle on how to, because again, if it's not through text messages, how to advocate for themselves, so they haven't been taught. So that's how we gotta teach too, as educators. We gotta coaches.
That's a key word. You said, how do you become an advocate for yourself? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good word, man. How do you advocate for yourself? Because you don't know how to advocate. Nobody's ever advocated for you, so you don't know. Like, okay, hey, maybe this guy is trying to help me out. Maybe this is, I don't know who this man is, but he's kind of interesting on what he's saying. You know, I think that kid, like, I think Rob had called me coach. Like, coach, y'all gonna play LSU this year? And the kid looked at me like, oh, you coach? I'm like, yeah. He goes, where? I said, Arizona State. He's like, he kind of looked at me. You know what I mean? It was just like, yeah, man. Yeah. Like, I look like a normal old ass man. You know what I mean?
Never know, man. Don't judge a book, for sure. For sure. Man. So before we get out of here, though, I want to leave it for you. Whatever thing you got to say for the kids, for your city, for your school, whatever you want to do, man, the floor is yours, man.
Nah, man, I appreciate you doing this for Sacramento, man. I think, like I said, that is home. For me, my mom still lives out there. I'm thankful that I grew up on the South Side. I'm thankful because Sacramento shaped me who I am. I hate when people say, is that the Bay Area? Because it ain't the Bay. You know, I'm thankful that we have people out there. Like, it's funny, we have our stereo system in the weight room, and I'll go put Mozzie on. And it's so fun to hear these kids rap on Mozzie songs.
Yay, right?
And they're yelling at me like, coach, you don't know who that is? You don't know about Mozzie? I'm like, all right, that's cool. You know what I mean? Like, I'm from there. You know what I mean? Like, I Mozzie was a little thing when I was coming up. You know what I mean? So just to hear these kids and hear how Sac is on the map, and I just wish all these kids the best of luck, man. And you said it earlier, take care of your mentals, take care of yourself. And at some point, you got to be selfish and put yourself first, man. If I ever say that, like, you know, I remember when I was excited if I was going to really go into college coaching. And my grandpa told me this, but again, like, he was like one of the smartest men I ever knew, man. He said, you can do whatever you want to do. You got to get in the car and go. And it didn't make sense at that time, but it makes so much sense now when I'm sitting in the room looking across from Lincoln Riley, or, you know, getting calls from SEC schools trying to steal me from Oklahoma, or getting the calls from NFL teams saying, hey, we want you to come here. I'm like, no, I'm happy at Oklahoma. You know what I mean? Or talking to the top 1% recruits in the country. Like, I'm so fortunate. I'm so lucky, but I'm still that same kid that was eating that Church's Chicken right there on Mac Road in Valley High. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I still go to the same barbershop.
Yeah.
I still used to go to, you know, where I used to get my Dickies and my white t-shirts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the little spot over there by Albertsons.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still that same kid. I didn't forget where I came from. I never will.
That's super dope, man. I appreciate you. And I want to, you got some on your hands, man. Your niece out here, your niece is going to be cold, man. I see her in the gym working. She going to be tough, man. You got some special too on that side too. She gonna be cold.
I tell Willie this all the time, man. Because Willie calls me and says, "Hey, what do I need to do when it comes to recruiting?"
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, "This is what you need to do." Then he don't listen, and then he'll come back a week later. You know, she's trying to figure out an AAU team, and then he's like, "You know what? I should have listened." And I'm like,
We had to talk about a week ago too, and we talked. He was like, "JT, give me the real JT." I said, "Man, I got you," because it's like, you know what I mean. It's you got something special, but you got to be smart. It's about her, you know what I mean, for her best development. But you know what I mean, we had to talk.
And I tell him too, it ain't about you. Sit your butt. I'm trying to go to basketball game. You want to stand up and make it about him? It ain't about you.
Yeah.
Sit back. Like when I go to my daughter's meets, I can easily get mad at her because I told her what to do.
Mm-hmm.
She don't do it. It ain't about me at the end of the moment. It's about her.
Yep.
You know,
because
I see the stresses that our kids have. That their parents put upon them,
right?
And you know, our job is to apply pressure, not apply stress. Because pressure you can control,
right.
Stress you can't, you know. And I tell kids that all the time, like, my job is to apply pressure. If I'm yelling at you, I'm applying pressure, not applying stress.
Okay.
Like, I can't. Stress is like me telling you have to get 15 sacks or we will not win a national championship.
Yeah.
That's something you can't have no control over.
You can't control that.
You know?
Yeah.
But I said, if you do X, Y, and Z, I'm going to pressure you to get there, then that's pressure.
That's what's up. I like that.
I really got to stop stressing her butt out, boy.
Apply pressure, not stress. I like that, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate you, Coach Kane, man. Have a good one. Good luck upcoming season, summertime. I know the grind is – I know you're already grinding, man. So I'll be looking forward to watching y'all again, man.
We got to meet here in 15 minutes by recruiting.
Oh,
man.
Yeah, for sure, man. Handle your business, man. Appreciate you.
All worries.
All right, man. Have a good one. Yes, sir.
Take care.
Later. You too.